minority-based conversations in the military can be difficult. They can make you seem out of sync with those who you're supposed to connect with. Insert Cadence Combos. On the 1st and the 15th of every month, I will bring you a different minority military experience. These experiences are told from an individual perspective designed to help you connect through conversation. So let's get in line, let's educate, let's relate, and get in sync. Come join the conversation. Legal disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed or implied on any of these episodes are solely those of the individual, and they do not represent the military in any shape or form. Thanks.
So, LA, welcome to the show. Welcome to Cadence Combos. I'm glad to have you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So we're going to start off with what would you say is your minority affiliation?
So I'm an African-American woman, third generation American. My family is from the Caribbeans, the Bahamas specifically.
Oh, okay. I don't even think I knew that. Okay. And so can you tell me a little bit about your background? Just summarize it, your upbringing, your type of neighborhood, what kind of people you grew up around, things like that.
So I actually grew up as a military brat. My dad is retired Army. He was a sergeant first class in food services. He did about 21 and a half years. And so even though I am a military brat, I primarily grew up in Fort Stewart, Georgia, and at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. And so growing up in Fort Jackson, right outside the gates, probably about 15 minutes away, it's the South, the traditional South. My neighborhood was not predominantly Black, but the area is an African-American area, just being in the South in general. I grew up in a, middle-class home, Southern. All of my family is in South Carolina. Some of my family, the part that came from the Caribbeans on my mother's side, is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And so that's primarily where we're from.
Wow. And then did you have siblings or are you an only child?
Lots of siblings. So I have one sister and four brothers.
And where in there? Are you like in the middle?
I'm in the middle. I am in the middle. We're a blended family. So I was the oldest at home.
So then what brought you into the military? Was it the fact that you're a military brat, so you gravitated towards it or what?
Absolutely not.
I knew you were going to say that's why.
Nope. Actually, that had nothing to do with it. So I actually thought the opposite. I never wanted to go into the military. Growing up, I kind of saw the military as an option for people that had no other options. Mm. You know, I thought, hey, this is somewhere where they don't allow you to think. They don't want you to be yourself. Everybody has to be a robot. That is absolutely not something I'm interested in doing. I will never be like my dad. Hence, 15 years later, here I am. But that was not the idea at the time. So really, I graduated from high school and I went to College of Charleston. I didn't go too far from home, in Charleston, South Carolina. And I got down there and my dad says that I had a major in boys 101 and partying as a minor. And so as you can imagine, that does not exactly make for good grades. Mm-mm. And so I went to school on a full scholarship. And by the end of my freshman year, like a lot of college students, I lost my full scholarship. Wow. And my parents were asking me, hey, so you didn't take school seriously. So what are you going to do now?
Wow.
And at that time, like a lot of people, hey, those radio commercials actually work sometimes. I was listening to a hip hop radio station and I heard the commercial, and I can still remember it to this day. It was one of those, girl, I need money for college. Girl, you do? Well, they got the Army National Guard. The Army National Guard? I'm going to join the Guard. Girl, you should. They pay for school and everything. All you have to do is 1 week in a month. And I thought, that's it. That's me. I'll, 1 week in a month.
Sign me up.
I knew another girl. So there was a girl in my dorms that I was fairly close friends with. And she was doing the 1 week in a month. And she had been doing it since she was 17. So she'd actually been doing it for like a year and a half. And so once a month, while the rest of us were hanging out at the club, she would go drill. And then she mm-hmm. would come back. She never went anywhere. So I thought, like, well, how hard can that be? If she can do it, I can probably do that. So when my parents told me that the options were either I had to figure out a way to pay for college or come home, I went to the recruiting station. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, by the grace of God, and a very interesting experience, I got down there and I didn't really know what I was signing up for. Like I said, my father was a senior NCO, retired Sergeant First Class. And mm-hmm. so I thought that there was really only like one, I didn't know there were officers and enlisted. I just okay. thought that it was all just the military. Mm-hmm. So I went down there. I told them that, hey, I've got like a year plus of college and I'm just trying to get some money to go to school. And the recruiter was like, man, boy, do I have a deal for you. And as I sat down in the chair, out of nowhere, the recruiting station officer actually showed up. So the mm-hmm. the MEPS commander, I didn't know, I called her the recruiting station officer at the time, but it was the MEPS commander. She was a captain. I didn't know that at the time. African-American captain. And she saw me sit down. And as I began to talk to her recruiter, she was watching me. She stopped what she was doing. She said, come here. And she said, do you know who I am? I said, no, ma'am. I was like, you know, 19 at the time. I'm like, no, somebody who's older than me. Other than that, I'm not really sure. And she said, I'm in charge of the recruiting station. I said, oh, okay. And she said, what are you doing here? And I told her, well, I need money for school. And I heard a commercial and I'm signing up. And she said, you're not supposed to be here.
Wow.
And I kind of looked at her. I was like, I don't understand this. It's where I'm supposed to be because I need to sign up. I need money for school. And she said, no. Have you ever heard of commissioning? Have you ever heard of being an officer? Do you understand what I'm wearing right now? And she pointed to her rank. And I said, no, ma'am, I don't understand. And she explained to me that, hey, you have some college and you have an opportunity to go to an Air Force or an Army ROTC program. And she introduced me to a senior NCO at a local ROTC detachment. And that's how I ended up going to college ROTC and hence going into the military.
Whoa. So she took an interest in you, somebody who looked like you.
Yes.
Took an interest in you, stopped what she was doing and basically brought you into where you are now, put you on that path at least.
She did. She did. If it wasn't for her taking the time and just even educating me on something that I had no idea about, I probably would have been enlisted right now. And she had been enlisted, she was prior service. And so she was like, hey, you know, if you want to do this, I support you, but I want to make sure that you understand and you know what all your options are, because there are a lot of people that don't know their options when they come in here. And understanding what I understand about recruiting now, like, you know, she didn't get anything off of me going to that ROTC detachment because I wasn't helping her meet her numbers, but she did something to help me as a person.
Wow.
And that was important.
It is. And it's nothing wrong with being enlisted. Like, I like how you put that. Like, if you want to go that route, but it's something about she just wanted you to know your options.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, she is a captain at a year.
I know. I wish I knew her name. I wish I understood what she did for me in that moment, but I didn't really understand the magnitude of what she was offering me. I didn't understand the opportunities. And for me, you know, having grown up and living with a senior NCO and knowing like all the work he put in and how respected he was, and watching him work, I knew that that meant something and that was meaningful, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what it felt like to be a part of something like that.
Yeah. So then as you start making your way into the military, so you're from the South, and so I think I'm also from the South. And so I grew up very much aware of race. At least how it pertained to me and my house in the lens that my parents experienced race, which is how, you know, I first was introduced to race and also with gender, you know, being familiar with being a Southern woman and some of the roles and responsibilities. My mom raised us to like women do certain things and men do certain things. So I grew up very much aware of those roles and ideas. So for you coming up from the South, and then going into the military, did you come from a background that where you were cognizant of race, where it was kind of discussed in the home, or were you raised where it's just, you know, people are people and let's just do what we got to do?
A bit of both, right? So my mother, so I told you that my family on my mother's side, when they came from the Caribbeans, they came to Florida. And so my mother grew up in Florida. A lot of Floridians at that time would move, and a lot of Caribbean people moved to New York. So she grew up in the South, and then she grew up in New York, and then she came into the military. And so she had a broader perspective of the world when she met my dad, them both serving in the military. And then they ended up at Fort Jackson. So my first experience with race happened right outside the gates and was something very real for me. When my mom got out the military, she wanted to go to school. And so she sent us to a local daycare. And the local daycare, when my mom showed up, they didn't know that we were an African-American family. So my mom talked to them on the phone and said, hey, I want to enroll my children in your daycare. They said, hey, come on down. And my mom showed up with these two chocolate children. And the school said, wait a second. We've actually got to have a meeting to decide if we can let African-Americans in. We've never had any Black families apply to come here before. And we're afraid that if we do allow you in, our white enrollment will drop, because there will be people that will not allow their children to stay at this school.
And that's your generation. Like, that wasn't years and years ago. That happened to you.
That happened to me as a child. So race has always been very real. But again, growing up in the South, there are a lot of African-Americans in the South, not necessarily mm-hmm. in my neighborhood, not necessarily in my school growing up. Even when I got ready to pick a college, I picked College of Charleston. And so the area around the College of Charleston is probably about 90% African-American. However, on campus, it was about, I think it might've been between 4 and 8% at the time. Mm. So very few minorities at my school and in my campus. But I guess I never felt out of place, because the entire area I was surrounded by culture and people of different backgrounds. Even if they weren't sitting next to me in the classroom, all of that culture was still available to me just right outside the classroom.
Okay, yeah, I get it. And do you think that like having military parents raise you allowed you to kind of see those differences as opportunity for culture versus someone who maybe wasn't exposed like that and they didn't see the differences as opportunities, but as kind of hindrances?
So I'm not really sure how much of a role that played, like the military aspect of it played, only because I only really lived in two bases, both in both of those bases. Fort Stewart is another base that's in the South in Hinesville, Georgia. And I had very similar racial experiences in outside of those gates as I did outside of Fort Jackson growing up. But my parents always taught us that race doesn't matter. You can still perform, you can still be the very best person, and that you're not limited by your race. My mom, I can remember, she would buy a lot of Ebony and Essence magazines when I was a little girl, and she would hang the posters on the wall, because at that time they would have in there, this woman is a professional, or she's the first Vanessa Williams, or this is the first Miss America, the first. And there were a lot of firsts in the 80s. There were a lot of firsts. And so all of those firsts, my mom would make sure that she pointed out to me, hey, she did this and you can do that also. She did this. And so there was a lot of positive reinforcement to show me what I could do, not what I could not do.
So then you have a lens and some experiences with race and gender. So then you fast forward to coming into the military. Like, what was your expectation of how you would be treated in the military? And did your race or gender play a part in your expectations?
So I should probably set the background a little bit for this. So for me, when I came into the military, I got married young. And so both my husband and I were in the military together. And so we were looking for a joint spouse assignment. And our first assignment was to out to Fairchild Air Force Base. And I didn't know where Fairchild was. I couldn't locate it on a map. I'd never heard of it. So, of course, I get on the internet and I look, my heart just dropped. It was all the way clear across the country, Washington State. And then I look at the map and I'm thinking, Washington State, Seattle, nope, the other side. You're talking about Spokane and Idaho. And so, the first thing I do is being a minority, and I don't know if everyone does this, but I certainly do this. The first thing I do is I want to know, well, are there other minorities? Is it like, what's the community like? I'm immediately looking for places that I can get food that I'm familiar with, or, someone that
Shopping
can do my hair,
connection.
things, yeah, things, things that
Hair.
seem familiar, right? Those are important to me. And so, I'm thinking, let me look and see. And so I go out and I search on the internet and I see two things. The first thing I see is that the area is only about 2 to 3% African American. So, not a lot of minorities in the area. And then the second thing I see is a story on the nearby area of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which it was not a flattering story. They have in that area, they've had a history of some hate groups in that area. And it's a shame because it's a beautiful area. Like, the
Yeah,
people
Coeur
are
d'Alene
very
is
friendly.
beautiful.
It's gorgeous. The people are friendly, and like anywhere, yes, there are people that may have different views that I don't agree with. But overall, again, beautiful area, wonderful people. But I couldn't see past that because all I could see was I was moving to this area that only was, a very small percentage, and I didn't know if or when I would see anyone that looked like me. And then I began to think, well, that's fine because I'm going to an Air Force base, and the military is a melting pot. There are all kinds of people in the military, right? Like, that is one good thing about serving, is you get an opportunity To be exposed to different backgrounds and races, yes, and religions, and you name it, we probably have it in the military. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember getting to the base and thinking, oh, it'll be fine. I'll find some other people. And I got there and in a tour of 3.5 years there, there was only one other African-American female officer. And I think there were two Hispanic female officers. That was it. Mm-hmm. That was it. And so there weren't a lot of opportunities and conversations at that time on any kind of diversity at all. Yeah. I remember one of the first things, one of the most memorable things for me regarding my experience with being African-American and a female, I had a staff sergeant who came to me in my squadron. And so she came to me and she said, hey, my NCOIC will not allow me to wear my hair in any way other than in box braids and in a bob. If I wear any other kinds of braids, he's going to mark me down on professionalism because he thinks that looks unprofessional. And she wanted me to do something, but I was only a second lieutenant and I didn't know what to do. And right, there was no one there to have that conversation with. And she was expecting me to, you know, do something, like say something, do something, advocate.
Fix it. And you're an officer.
You're an officer. And I didn't really even understand why she was telling me, because I was just kind of like, I'm not even sure what I'm supposed to do with that. Where's the AFI? Like, what does it say on this? And so that's one of the times that that was a missed opportunity for me, just because I didn't take that time to, and I didn't know how to approach that kind of situation. But I think that was probably the first time in my professional career that race and gender were real for me.
Something you said I want to go back to was when you got to the base and you know exactly how many minority officers there were. And because I can relate, I'm like, yep, my first base, there was 3 Black officers and 1 Hispanic officer. And like, I know that. So as an officer too, do you think you get segregated and limited by who you can affiliate with when you get to a base? Because you can't mingle, you know, and hang out with enlisted airmen. And then, so you only already are limiting to the officer pool. And then of the officer pool, you get even less of a mix. And so you really start to become just kind of like out there by yourself. Would you say that's the case for, that was the case for me. So would you say that was the case for you coming in?
I would definitely agree with that. There wasn't really anybody that I could look at. Not that I was so interested in having one at the time, but there wasn't a role model per se. Right. There was no one that I could look at and say, I want to be like that person, or they're,
or even where you could say, is this okay? Or is this normal for you? Yeah.
Yeah. There was no one to run things by or talk things through with. You're just sort of, you know, I had the other 3 ladies that were on the installation, but everybody's different, right? So mm-hmm. all minorities are not the same. There's right. no one group that's, kind of monolithic, should we say, where they all think alike and act alike. Everyone's got their own thing going on. So just because there were other minority females, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were the ones to be role models or to even run some of my issues by, because they had about as much experience as I did. Yeah. And so when you're in a situation like that and you don't have anyone to run those things by, you sort of normalize them. And it just is what it is.
Yeah. So much right there. All right. So that's base one. And I know there's other experiences, but kind of fast forward throughout your military career, did you continue to have experiences where your race or your gender had an impact on how you experienced the military?
Yes, I have probably one at the next base. There's something everywhere you go, right? But there are a couple that are more memorable than others. So yeah, probably my second duty station, there were two things that I remember. One, I was a protocol officer for a while. Mm-hmm. And so serving on protocol staff, I never noticed until someone brought it to my attention. But at the time I was serving on that staff, it was all minorities serving on that staff.
Mm-hmm.
It was all minority females, and we had one minority male. Everyone mm-hmm. on that staff was African American or Asian. And yep. so it wasn't until someone else pointed out, like, hey, what's up with that? Why is the entire staff look like that? That I looked around and thought, I guess that is not what the Air Force normally looks like, considering that I just came from this base where there were only four of us on base, and now I'm in an office where they're like,
yeah,
full of it. But at the time, I was so happy that I had other people that looked like me around yeah. me that I didn't even think about what that looked like.
Right.
But I think when it was brought to my attention, I looked at it and I looked around, and then I thought to myself, wait a second. So we're all over here in the protocol office, but I noticed that in the jobs that per se really matter, the right. Aide, the executive assistant, the CAG chief, they were all not like me.
Right.
I didn't recognize anybody that looked like me or sounded like me. I didn't see any women in those positions. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any minorities in those positions. And so I don't think anyone ever brought that to the attention of that senior leader, right? Like, I don't think there was a conscious decision that, hey, we're going to hire these people into this position and we're going to hire these people into this position. But I can tell you what that end result looked like from not yeah. putting any thought into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to another office at that same installation. And in that office, I was supposed to be giving a briefing to a group of general officers. And so I had done the big chop per se. I went all
okay,
natural.
Okay, pause. So I gotta say, so because some people are gonna hear this, like, what is the big chop? Big chop. Okay. My big chop was, I call it my ugly face. I'm not an ugly person, blah, blah, blah. But when you take all your hair and you cut yes. all the relaxer, the stuff that make your hair straight, you cut all correct. This off, and you get down to what your real hair is. I had about an yes. inch. I looked like a little boy, and yes. I did not like it. So go on. Big chop. We just yeah. want people to know what that is.
Yeah, so that is the big chop. So I did the big chop, and I'd done the big chop for a number of reasons. Just it for me, it was just something that I felt like I needed to do. So I do it. I come back to work. My hair is neat. It's professional, but and people are telling me, oh, you cut your hair off. You know, you get those kind of comments. And
it's not like, oh, that's good. It's just like, oh, are you okay? You
yes. cut your
hair. Oh, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they think you're going through some kind of life crisis yes. or something. So it's like, nope, I'm fine. I just made a decision that I'm no longer going to wear a relaxer in my hair. So I get asked, hey, you know, you're on tap to do this briefing, and I'm very excited. I've been working on my notes. I have a room full of GOs that I have flown in, and I'm going to get a chance to speak. And a couple of days before the briefing, I was asked hey, are you going to go get your hair done?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to go get your hair done? I had to think mm-hmm. about it for a minute. What is she trying to ask me? I said, no, my hair is already done. I just came from getting my hair done. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, okay. And she smiled politely and she walked off. Well, the next day I got an email. Hey, look, you're no longer doing this briefing. Yeah. Now, I didn't associate that with anything. Like, things change. They always tell you, like, flexibility is the key to air power. So,
Right. Okay,
something must have changed. Awesome. I'm not doing it. All right, no biggie. I'm a little bummed, but whatever. So, a staff sergeant that worked in the office with the lady who asked me the question approached me and said, hey, ma'am, I need to talk to you for a moment. Yes, what's up? Hey, they pulled you off that briefing because of your hair. What was funny was that staff sergeant, she also had natural hair. But it was like she was invisible because they had that conversation in front of her.
Wow.
Without regard for, you know,
what hey, you're in the same like. Boat too. So we're gonna talk negative about somebody who looks like you in front of you for something that should never be a negative thing on somebody anyway.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think that experience of just, it didn't make me change my hair. I didn't decide, oh, I need to fix this. I need to. I decided that anybody who wanted to hire me and was interested and what I had to offer would hire me. And mm-hmm. I would still be given those opportunities despite my hair. And so I didn't make any changes, but I did understand. And I thought back to that staff sergeant at my first base back at Fairchild. And I understood. I understood something in a new way that I had never understood before. And so for me, that was probably a continued theme. As recent as even my last assignment, I realized I had a higher ranking officer pull me aside and ask me, as I continued to wear my natural hair, have you ever thought about relaxing your hair? I think you would look like more of a professional, and you would get more front office type opportunities if you would mm-hmm. just make that one change.
Which that question is loaded with so much.
That is
ugly. It's so, yeah. And people, when they ask you that too, like, I believe they don't know what they're saying. They're just saying what they think is okay to say, what they think is right. They think they're helping you out, but really you're like, that is an ugly question to ask me. And I want to excuse you for it, but I need to address it. And there's so much with it, but they're like, oh, you know, you would look better if, instead of understanding or relating or seeing it as a professional look, they look at it as, well, that can't possibly be professional, and you need to change. I don't need to change my lens. You need to change how you look. And then Correct. Things would be better for you if you would just change how you look.
Correct. And so I think that's probably the hair conversation has probably been one of the more challenging that I never thought that would be the one thing. But if I had to say the one consistent theme throughout my career, it's been the hair talk, right? Like, no matter Yes. what installation I'm at, what level Mm-hmm. I'm working at, there's always a conversation about hair, even if it's not a bad one. It could be the conversation, you're always changing your hair.
Yeah, don't you're get me always, started on that.
You're so there's
oh,
there's
Tamika,
always
you changed
something.
Your hair again. Oh,
you changed your hair again. Yeah. So
what's it? What's the and it's a whole. So I've gotten used to it, but. And so let me say this too, like, when I came in the military, so you know me, I've got my hair, I'm going to change it up probably every week and a half, every depend on how it's doing. If it's,
right,
whatever it's doing, I'm trying to make it work. So I grew up like that, though. Even when I had relaxer, yes, my mama would take us. We get our hair done every two weeks.
That's right.
It was, and then at the 6 weeks was the relaxer, a retouch, you getting finger waves, yes, or something. You're getting your hair done. And it's, yes, not, and if you're going to spend all that money, you're not going to get the same hairstyle over and
correct,
over.
Correct. You want something
So I come in the Air Force and I get the, why do you change your hair all the time? And I was like, you know what? Why don't you change your hair ever? Like, yes, I never, why don't y'all change? I never thought about not, like, why would you not be changing your hair? You pay for it
every time you go.
Why are you not getting something different? But they're looking at me like, why don't you just get something that works and keep your hair consistent?
And keep it.
And I'm like, and I remember I called my mom and I was like, Mom, I didn't know. This is what I said. I don't want nobody to get upset. But I said, Mom, white women don't change their hair. And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm at work. And the white ladies I work with, they're getting on me about changing my hair all the time. And I just realized that they don't change their hair. I mean, it's a general statement, but that's the place that I was at in life. But I was just like, why y'all get mad at me? Like, you should change your hair every single time.
Yeah, I would say, so I would probably say that's been consistent. And then the other thing I would say, in addition to the hair conversation, probably the other thing that has gone with that, there have been times going back to my first installation where I felt like I was invisible. So for me, what this looked like, you come in and you're a second lieutenant, and people would say, they would pass me and they would make comments like, oh, ma'am, I didn't see you. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were an officer. I thought.
So that's where I have a problem too, when they don't even look for you to be an officer. It still happens to me today. It happens to me still. And they're like, oh, I didn't see you. I'm like, yeah, yes, you saw me. But what you're saying is you didn't look for a rank to be affiliated with officer rank because you saw a black girl. And so your brain, just for whatever reason, automatically went to assuming that this is probably not somebody I need to, you know, do customs and courtesies with, because I wouldn't expect them to be of that group of people.
Yes. And and so I would say that's probably the other, and I think I used to let it slide, right? Like when I first came in, I was like, oh, maybe they really didn't see me. I don't think saw me. And you know who taught me to know you need to address that? It was other African-American senior NCOs that saw that behavior. And when I did not correct that behavior, they corrected me.
Yes.
And they told me, hey, ma'am, what are you doing? Oh, well, they didn't say, they saw, go back and fix it. I used to have a chief, and the chief would stand there and make me go back and find that person and address it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said, when things come up, I need to know that you know how to address them. Because when you address things, you're not just addressing it for yourself. And you're not just addressing an issue for a black female or for a name, your gender, race, identity. You're addressing them for an airman. This is the professionalism, and customs and courtesies are what we do as airmen.
I love good senior NCOs. Oh my gosh. That needs to be a whole nother episode by itself. Just the master sergeants that raised me, I'm telling you, like, you can't pay a good senior NCO enough money for what they do for real.
Correct.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm grateful for that experience, because that kind of, it taught me that I have to, when I see something that's wrong, when you see something, say something, that's for real. And that's an expectation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what if your narrative, right, your common theme in the Air Force is this, and I'm not saying that it clouded everything, but if when it comes to race, gender, identity type of things, the common theme is about the hair or the invisibility factor. And that's happening. You've been in for a hot minute. Like, why would you stay? Why would you stay in the organization to do that? Why not just, you know, count your losses, go be great somewhere else and say, you know, I tried. Why stay?
So because the Air Force, I think the Air Force is still a great organization, right? And
right.
those experiences, yes, they have shaped me as a leader, but they don't define me as a leader, right? They've shaped me, but my Air Force career and my Air Force experience is so much richer than that. And I have so much to share with other airmen, with my community, with my family. And this has given me an opportunity and a platform to do that. Being in the Air Force is an opportunity. You can't make change, not as much change from the outside, I believe, as you can from the inside.
Yeah,
right?
Preach. Well, yes.
Like,
yes.
I can't get out and give up and say, oh, well, you know, they think I'm not going to stay in and put up with this. People can think whatever they want to think. I can't stop that. But I can influence and I can educate and I can be a change agent. And that's what I want to do. And I don't represent just people that look like me. I represent all airmen. Yes. I am
like
representative
we say,
of all airmen. Big
right.
A.
Yeah.
I am representative of all airmen. I'm so much more than the little black girl, right? I'm a mother.
Right.
I'm a wife.
You're a boss.
I'm a boss. You know, there's so many other things that I am. I have so many rich experiences from both my upbringing as, you know, I was a military child. I was a military mill-to-mill spouse. So I understand what that is. I went through a divorce. So I understand how to be the single military mom. There are so many multifacets to my experience that I take all of that into leading wherever I am.
Perfect. Yeah, I love that. So so if folks want to get up with you, LA, how can they find you and hit you up if they want to know some more or get mentorship or anything like that?
I'm on the global. Major Lenora Alva, A-L-V as in Victor, A.
All right. That's what's up. Well, thank you. Thank you for this interview. You know, I always love talking to you. I could talk about you in so many positive ways. I love you so much because you're just awesome. I've seen you handle so many different things, just like a boss, like a professional, like a example. And so it's an honor to know you. And I'm really glad I got to talk to you on this show tonight.
Well, can I just say one more thing?
Yeah.
So I want people to realize the opportunities that we're being afforded now as airmen and as military members. And I think it's important that people know I haven't always felt like I've had the opportunity or been comfortable sharing my experience in the military as a minority. But now I feel like those opportunities are there. Your senior leaders, they want to hear from you. People want to know and they want to understand, right? Yep. Like a lot of it is just misunderstanding. And so if you have an opportunity to share your story on whatever platform, your Air Force story, share it, right? Like don't hold it, don't hide it, share it, because it should benefit someone more than just you.
Yeah. And especially now, because like you said, I'm excited. I'm frustrated in some senses, but I'm excited in a lot of senses that conversations can happen publicly about the things that I've been privately having to talk about for all these years. And to hear, I'm always impressed with my 4-star. He brought us over for coming into training for command. And General Ray, the first day we came to class, he said, all right, there's a lot of people here and there's a lot of people at the top, but there's not a lot of people at the top that look like the people here. And we have to change that. And if that wasn't clear enough in his whole, like General Ray is like a super gangster. How he, like he's eloquent in the way he, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm impressed. I'm a fan. But he said after that, he said, so what I'm saying is there's a lot of people at the top wearing the rank I wear and they look like me. And we don't have a lot of minorities. We don't have a lot of women. We don't have a representation of what we need to be the lethal force of the future. And so we got to work on changing that right now. And I was just, so that was my impression, my first time coming into command and hearing that that's my 4-star. And I sat there and something just excited me more, like more than this opportunity to command, this opportunity to be an officer and to do all that stuff. Then it just kind of heightened this excitement in me that there was somebody who has authority and power and influence. And he's saying those things very bluntly. And
yeah,
and that's what's happening in at least in our service right now. Yes. And if we don't maximize it, man, we're gonna regret it real big later on if we don't use the fact that people are interested and want to have conversations. We're gonna miss it.
Yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity. So right, you can't change. No one gets to decide the color of their skin. They can't mm-mm. change their gender. There are certain things that, you know, hey, we're just born with these things and that's yeah. it. But mm-hmm. we do have an opportunity to promote diversity of thought. And I think that's important. It's yeah. important that we promote diversity of thought because there are so many kinds of diversity and we spend so much time on the ones we can see, but there are other ones that maybe we can't see, but that can be used to make us a more lethal force. You know, yeah. don't just call your girlfriend on the phone and complain about it.
Right, because that helps nobody.
That doesn't help anybody. Mm-mm. Do something helpful.
Yeah. See something, say something, do something.
Yes.
That's the new motto.
Well, I like that. I'm going to add that one to it. See I something, like say that. Something, do something.
Do something. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. If I don't wrap up, I'm going to have you on this phone all night. So okay. Thank you. Thank girl. I appreciate you. The conversation.
Thank you.
Hey, that does it for today's episode. I want to say thank you so much for staying to the end, for listening to the conversation. You can follow me on at Cadence Convo on Twitter, and you can send me an email at shebegreat@gmail.com. And I try my best to respond. And of course, I'm on the global, Tamika Payne.